Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
Today's show is about brain fitness and speeding up learning. And this is something that works for people of all age groups, not just youngsters. It's very mature adults. You can exercise your brain and make it more, as they say in scientific terms, plastic. It's a wonderful way to actually be more productive and more successful in life. And today's guest is Dr. Martha Burns. And Dr. Burns has been a practicing speech language pathologist of Northwestern University in the Chicago area for the last 45 years or so. And she's also on the executive staff of Scientific Learning. Now, I do recommend you go to their website. It's scientificlearning.com, scientificlearning.com. So welcome, Marty. We affectionately call you Marty in the business. How are you today?
I'm just fine. Thank you so much, Roger.
I notice in the material here that there's some wonderful science, neuroscience, behind how children learn. Why don't we start off with you explaining that to the audience so they can benefit from this information you've got?
Okay, great. Neuroscience is a relatively new field because we've just been able over the last 15 years or so to see the brain at work. And that's helped us understand how children learn. And what we've discovered from neuroscience is that really the main architecture of the brain, if you think of the brain as a huge highway system, that architecture is laid down in the early years of life when parents talk to their children. When parents interact with their children, talk and play, the architecture in the left hemisphere builds the language architecture that supports learning of mathematics and learning of science and learning of reading. And in the right hemisphere, the architecture builds for social skills. And that then supports all further development and learning as children mature.
The next question obviously becomes is how technology is leveraging this information is being used in the classroom.
What neuroscientists have discovered is they've applied this new research and used technology to get into the brain of children through exercises that are really look like video games to children, but exercise memory and attention and processing speed. And when you exercise that, it is like fitness. The brain is a use it or lose it organ just the way your muscles are. Yeah. So if you exercise it in a child, if you give them memory activities to do, if you give them exercises that specifically improve their ability to attend, then they do better in school. Obviously, they can attend to what the teacher's saying, they can understand it, and they can hold on to it, they can remember it. And that's really what educational success is all about. And those interventions are, because they're like video games, they can be used at home or they can be used in the classroom, in the school, in computer labs, where students just have brain fitness exercises the way they would go to the gym to do physical fitness exercises.
Actually, I would like to share a personal experience. And talking about what you just said, it reminds me of when I was doing my Montessori training. It was something that was just so extremely new. It was such a steep learning curve for me. But I would say that after the first 3, 4, maybe 5 months of exposure to this, reading and having to learn the new language and the new way of thinking and such, it was, as I said, a huge learning curve. It exercised my learning muscle, but afterwards, I really felt like I could take on anything. I felt like I could learn anything at that point. So is that along the lines of what you're talking about?
Yes, it really is. The brain loves new things, it loves novelty, and there are all sorts of chemicals associated with learning new things, which is why children are just learning animals, why they say why all the time. And so even as an adult, if you get in and really push your brain to do new things and to exercise it, to hold on to new information, that becomes almost habit forming, and you want to continue to learn then, and you want to continue to practice those skills. So it becomes a self-fulfilling perpetuating kind of process, just kind of like exercise does. If you exercise a lot, then you really look forward to exercising.
Right.
Same thing with children using their brain. Exactly.
So going back to what you said with parents, or I should say children, who continuously ask their parents, why? You know, we always get their parents who just get enough of why that they get so frustrated. It's like, because, or whatever. What kind of suggestions or advice can you give parents who have children who just keep asking why all the time?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, as a speech therapist, one of my favorite stories is often I'll see children who are struggling to talk, and the parents are very concerned. And then about 6 months or a year after speech therapy, they'll say, I thought my child was never going to talk. Now I'm afraid he's never going to be quiet. But that is it. Talking is what human beings love to do. It builds the architecture of the brain. And if parents can interact with a child with games, games that you play in the car, get the children to start thinking about things like, find all of the things as we're driving along that start with the letter A. Now let's find some things that start with the letter B. By channeling the child's inquisitive nature and desire to learn into game-like activities that parents do with children, they can enjoy each other. They're interacting, so they're building up social skills as well. And they're showing their children, they're giving their children a way to think about learning as opposed to just asking why, actually turn it into an adventure, turn it into a game, turn it into something fun to do.
Is there some place that parents can go to get these types of suggestions? Because not all parents are as inventive, I suppose, as you and I could be. But is there some place like a website or a book or some place they could go to get these kinds of suggestions and ideas?
Yes. First of all, the website that Roger mentioned earlier is an excellent one, scientificlearning.com. And there is a blog there. If you go to that website, up at the top in the menu, it will say blog. And the blog is for parents and teachers. And it has a lot of ideas for parents and teachers to stimulate this kind of exercising of the brain, and it also provides some research on neuroscience for parents and teachers in a way that's easy to use and easy to understand that helps them to think of things to do also. Then I have a blog of my own that's Burns Parent Smart, all one word, and parent is singular, Burns, B-U-R-N-S, Parent Smart, .blogspot.com, that is just activities for parents to do with their children. Games to play at the dinner table, games to play in the car, ways to keep children busy on a snowy winter afternoon when they're bored to death, that are constructive and fun to do.
That is actually interesting to be hearing you saying this, Marty, because I've spent many years dealing with elite athletes and also in the realm of some of what they call the new agey type science to do with improving human ability. And one of the things that one can do is knowingly directing one's attention onto things.
Exactly,
It makes you very present and, of course, has you being very alert. And I noticed that the exercise that you mentioned by causing a child to direct their attention, and they do it themselves knowingly, it puts them very much more in control of their awareness and attention, and that's a great exercise. And I see in some of your notes here, you have a comment that you can discuss on how playing certain kinds of games with children can make them school smart. Have we already covered that, or you got some?
Well, another example, just to follow up with what you're saying, Roger, is a game I call Play Attention, where, because if children attend to a teacher, obviously they're learning much more. And one of the hardest things children need to do is learn how, as you say, to focus their attention to what's relevant and ignore things that are distracting or irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And a great game that you can play with young children that we've been playing for years is Simon Says. Because Simon Says is a game where children have to pay attention to whether you're just giving a command, like stand up, sit down, close your eyes, or whether you're introducing it with Simon Says. And they have to be very alert to that. And that actually builds a skill that psychologists call vigilance, that is associated with good attending skills in school and good achievement in skills. And vigilance is also tested to see if students have, or if children have, attention deficit disorder. So right. You can work with that on children as well as working on language. And if it's a game-like activity, the children don't think they're working. They think they're just having a great time.
Right.
Plus, it also gives a parent an opportunity, if you're playing with your children more actively, to recognize if there might be a problem in learning, to recognize mm-hmm. if the child might have attentional problems. You can see it better if you're interacting directly with the children, and then you can go from there and get professional help if you think you might need it.
Now, I notice another point. You talk about emotional intelligence, and you can actually address that and help build that in a child?
Yes, you really can. Emotional intelligence, it's the left hemisphere, seems as it does right now to be most important for school-like activities that involve symbol systems, so mm-hmm. reading and mathematics and science. The right hemisphere is about something we call theory of mind.
Right.
And theory of mind is the ability to put ourselves in someone else's shoes. So it's the ability for me to listen to your question and kind of figure out what you're interested in as opposed to talk about what I'm interested in. Well, it looks like theory of mind develops in children through communication and play and watching other people and talking about other people's feelings, looking at pictures in a picture book and saying, why do you think that child is unhappy? What are times when you've been unhappy? What can you do if somebody's unhappy to make them feel better? And talking about emotions and talking and just conversing with a child about their feelings and about other people's feelings is a great way to build up this emotional intelligence set of skills.
Because I was just wondering how it could be addressed in exercise, and you've answered the question. And just simply have them being more aware and alert, aware of it and alert to it, and experiencing it themselves, and of course it develops. That's, as we would say in Australia, a no-brainer. You say that in America as well, don't you?
Yes, we do.
No-brainer.
That's right. But I'm going to tell you it is a big brainer because it makes the brain bigger and stronger and faster, and that's what we're actually about.
And where does that phrase brain plasticity come from?
Well, it comes from the neuroscience research in how the brain changes. And there's a wonderful book, by the way, by Norman Doidge, Doidge, and the title of it is The Brain That Changes Itself, that describes how we've learned over the past 10 or 15 years how the brain is a organ that's constantly changing. It is a use it or lose it organ. It is something that we can exercise, as Virginia said, all our lives.
Right.
And this study of brain, quote, plasticity really came out of research by Michael Merzenich and other neuroscientists in the 70s, where they discovered that adult animals, you could change their brain dramatically simply through very specific kinds of training activities. And that led to things like fast forward, for example, which are exercises designed to help children with learning disabilities or struggling in school, or brain pro, to be able to improve skills that are going to make school easier for them.
How do those two programs that you just mentioned, how do they work?
Well, both Fast Forward and Brain Pro are designed by neuroscientists. They're designed to exercise underlying cognitive skills that support learning, as we said, like attention, memory, language skills, processing speed. So some of the exercises are just exercising they're game-like and the child feels like they're playing a game, but they're just having to listen to sounds that are closer and closer and closer together and shorter and shorter and shorter in time to get the brain to be processing information more quickly. There are other exercises that are like concentration exercises where children will hear sounds and they have to remember on a grid where they heard that word before or where they heard that sound before, and that builds up a skill that we call working memory that turns out to be an essential skill for reading and for test taking and for listening to teachers and for learning in general. So those underlying cognitive skills then can be built into computer activities that children can actually do them anywhere from a half an hour a day to 2 hours a day almost, and build those capacities. And that's what Fast Forward is, and that's what Brain Pro is. Brain Pro is more for children whose parents want them just to accelerate their learning, and Fast Forward is for students who are struggling a little bit more.
On the scientificlearning.com website, I found something called Build Brain Fitness, and there are four critical areas: memory, attention, processing, and sequencing. Well, we've already talked about memory and attention. Can you tell me what do you mean, or what does the website mean when it says processing and sequencing?
Okay, those are very good questions. I'll start with processing. When we're listening and talking to each other, what I have to do is take the information that's coming at me over the phone right now, or if we're talking in person, take that auditory signal that's moving through time very quickly, and I have to break it down into sounds and words and be able to handle all that information without tuning out or without having trouble interpreting it. And that we refer to as processing. We have visual processing skills that we use for driving a car or reading, and we have auditory processing skills that we use for language and also for reading. And that processing has to develop as a child matures, and it has to stay finely tuned, so that if anyone who's listening has an elderly parent, they might notice that the parents say "what" all the time when they're saying something, and that's the same as young children. They'll say, what did you say? You say, go upstairs, grab your coat, close the window, it looks like it's going to rain, don't forget your homework, and let's get downstairs. And the child goes, what? And when the child goes, what? Often that's because the child cannot process all that information.
Right.
It's coming at them too fast. So if we improve a child's ability to handle rapidly changing information like that that's coming at them through exercises that are game-like, then we improve the child's, quote, processing skills. Now, with sequencing, language involves sequences, so does math, so does science, a formula, you have to do it in the right order. But language involves sequences of sounds in words, so the difference between the word animal and the mispronunciation that many children have, aminal, is really a sequencing issue. But grammar is sequencing. If I say the boys run versus the boy runs, the only difference in those two sentences are where that little z occurred, what sequence that z occurred in. And if a child misses that or can't get hold the sequence in mind, and we've all had the experience where somebody gives us a phone number and we go to write it down and we reverse some of the letters, we don't sequence them correctly. Well, if that is an issue for a child, they're going to have trouble learning to read, they're going to have trouble interpreting grammar, they're going to have trouble with sometimes mathematics. So by building sequencing skills into children, just giving them exercises where they get to practice sequencing, and giving them exercises where they listen to streams of information and they have to handle longer and longer and longer sequences, then you're building up the capacity to do very well at listening in school and at listening in life, really. So that's why those are some of the underlying core skills that neuroscience-based interventions and programs like Fast Forward really work to augment in children.
Well, that is good. I noticed in your notes here that there is a difference between video and computer games that entertain versus those that build brains.
Right.
And you've got something to say on that, I'll bet.
so video games we all love, and video games themselves can be helpful for lots of things. There's a little bit of research that shows that surgeons who have an experience doing lots of video games involving action actually have better hand-eye coordination.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things I like to help parents understand is that most video games and computer games that we get for our children are entertaining, like television is entertaining.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with giving your children things that entertain them. But most researchers in neuroscience emphasize using entertainment kinds of games for after something worthwhile has been done. So after a child finishes their homework, then they get to do a half an hour of video games as a reward. But there's also video gaming technology that's being built in to all sorts of academic aspects of learning as well as what we've been talking about, these brain fitness exercises. So parents can start to select. They can go to good websites like Scientific Learning and start to figure out which video games can I have my child do where my child feels like they're playing a game, but it's actually educational and, or it's actually really going to help build their brain skills, and which should I use as a reward for getting other things done. And video games can be useful both ways.
Mm-hmm. And you've got those sort of products available at Scientific Learning, have you?
Exactly, yes.
That's
what Scientific Learning is all about.
And I noticed that there are some new iPad applications that help kids learn. Do you have those available? Or
huge new technology that parents love and children love. And I was at a restaurant recently and saw a tiny little girl. She looked like she was 2.5 with her parents' iPad, having no problem at all moving through pages on the iPad. But there's a wonderful, there are some excellent new cognitive activities for young children. And one of the ones I love best right now is Eddie's Number Party. It's not expensive. Parents can purchase it as an iPad app or a tablet app, and it builds the number sense. And the number sense, in addition to language, the number sense, our ability to know more versus less and bigger versus smaller and earlier versus later, those basic concepts start emerging in children very young, around 3 years of age. Mm-hmm. And as those children play with number concepts, it's going to help them in math and science when they get into school. So Eddie's Number Party is an example of a iPad app that's really fun for children, but is educational and constructive in what it helps children learn to do.
And develops that part of the brain. Do you think that there's any difference in efficacy in getting the result of brain development using something like an iPad versus more solid objects in the physical universe?
Most researchers feel that children need both, need a lot of time with physical toys. Toys that don't do anything where the child actually is creating something. So blocks and cars and dolls are still wonderful. I call them smart toys.
Right.
They're the best toys to get children started thinking about the world. iPads are kind of icing on the cake that can be used to reward a child with an entertaining game, or can be used as just part of something that you might do in an automobile, for example, when you're driving someplace and you want the child to be occupied with something good for them, you can bring the iPad and they can do iPad apps that are educational that way. Or at the dinner table if you're at a restaurant, something like that.
Is there anything in particular that homeschooling parents should know as opposed to parents who send their kids to public school?
Well, homeschooling parents are interesting because they're very aware. I mean, I think homeschooling parents that I've met and talked to spend a lot of time thinking about education and spend a lot of time researching what's best for their children. I think that, again, educational websites that are based in science are helpful for parents that are homeschooling, so that one of the hardest things all of us have as parents is weeding out what's really helpful from things that sound like they might be helpful, but there isn't any research that supports them.
Mm.
So the most important guide I give to parents is always, if you're looking on the internet to find new resources for your children or to find ideas for things to do with your children, look at the source and look at the research that supports it. Is the person talking about research in a blog, or are they talking about their own ideas or their own philosophy? And if there is research, check it out. Make sure that it is controlled research. Make sure that scientists agree with the research, because otherwise parents can be guided and misdirected pretty easily. We're all vulnerable to that if we're not very careful.
We've been speaking so far in the vein of dealing with the average child who can be very much assisted and made better. But going on your website, I noticed that you've also done a tremendous amount of work that's helped people who, for whatever reason, were behind the curve, reading a couple of years below grade level, for example. There's one case history where I'm reading on the site a child or achieved a 1 to 2 year reading gain in as little as 8 to 12 weeks using the fast forward reading intervention, you call it.
Yes, and the research does show about an average of a year and a half gain within, depending on how often a student uses it, within certainly a semester, a few months, and often cases within 6 to 8 weeks. And really what we've learned from neuroscience is that children who are struggling in school, that are behind, especially in reading or in mathematics, often are perfectly intelligent. There's nothing wrong with their intelligence, and there's nothing,
right,
quote, wrong with their brain. It just oftentimes that architecture has a weak spot in it. So the brain architecture that supports learning, perhaps some students who are struggling in reading, we've found a woman, Paula Talal, has done a great deal of research showing that some children who struggle to learn actually have trouble distinguishing and hearing perceiving some of the sounds of the language. And if you just train them to that ability to perceive sounds, suddenly all that reading education that they've had clicks, and they start to take off.
Looking at your work, I've noticed several things here. And in our own book, we refer to missing steps or missing gradients of skill development or missing gradients of knowledge upon which later higher levels of knowledge depend. And you actually process or directly address the ability to put in those gradient steps in the learning process. I like that.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's really what neuroscience is all about. And I give the example again, because you talk about brain fitness, the example of going to a gym. If as an older woman, I find that my upper body strength is really weak and that I'm hurting my shoulder every time I lift a heavy grocery bag, rather than just stop lifting grocery bags, what I can do is go to the gym and get a personal trainer to help me build the strength of my arms and shoulders so that I don't hurt myself. Well, it's the same philosophy, as you say, with these gradients. If I can get in there and just do some exercises designed to buttress those gradients that are weak, in a very short period of time, the supporting structure for all of that learning can start to excel and move as it should.
Well, I just want to share one thing, and that is in the vein of all of this learning, new learning keeps your mind active and plastic. I have started to take on learning how to play bridge, and that is a real learning exercise.
I'll say, and talk about working memory. Can you hold everyone's card in your mind yet?
No, nowhere near that.
But you will be able to soon.
Yes.
I mean, and when you think about that skill, now I haven't played bridge for a while, but bridge is something that a lot of people have talked a lot about, how important it is to working memory skills. And I'll tell you another one that it seems to be a great thing for us to do as we age, and that is take up a musical instrument. Mm. Because professional musicians have some of the best memory skills in old age of any profession, and they think it's because of having to sight read music. So there are a lot of activities all of us can do at any age to improve our brain capacity. It's a great example.
It is, Marty. So it's been a delight having Dr. Martha, affectionately known as Marty Burns, on our show today. And you can get all the information we've been talking about at the website at scientificlearning.com. And also your blog, Marty, give our listeners that again.
My blog is Burns Parent Smart, B-U-R-N-S, Parent Smart, all one word, .blogspot.com.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us, Marty. This has been wonderful for me, and I know for our audience as well.
Thank you, Roger and Virginia. It was delightful to talk to you.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.